Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 124. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris here today, wishing everybody out there in our audience a happy Memorial Day. And I specifically want to thank also the two gentlemen that are going to be joining us today for our panel. This is going to be a tremendous Stanley Cup final preview on the program. Two guys who we've been fortunate to have on the show previously in our five-plus year reign on the air, but that we haven't been able to pair them together. Haven't really had the occasion to do so, frankly, until now because of the teams that they cover. They've never crossed paths in a meaningful kind of way, really in the history of either franchise. For the Los Angeles Kings, it's only their second trip back to the Stanley Cup Finals, of course, the other time being the legendary run in 1993 and that great final series against the Montreal Canadiens. The New Jersey Devils have been there a bunch of times since, not least of which in 95, taking out my Red Wings in the process, something that, frankly, I have yet to forgive that franchise for. So very upfront about who I'm rooting for here, although I also have bad memories of 2001. So any way you turn, I suppose, there are ghosts, but when you're a fan of a team like the Red Wings, I guess there are going to be ghosts against a lot of different franchises out there. But be that as it may, it's a pleasure to bring these two gentlemen together on the program. We have joining us from out in SoCal, Keith Korneluk from KingsCast.tv, an excellent site to be able to stay up on everything that is happening with your Los Angeles Kings. And additionally, our good friend Ken Palmer, who we have on the show most regularly covering the NFL from Pigskin Insider and Giant Insider, but he also covers the New Jersey Devils for their game day program. So we are fortunate to have available to us gentlemen who cover both teams in the finals, and it's a pleasure to bring them both in. It's great to have you guys both on, Keith and Ken. Thank you very much for being on the FDH Lounge today, fellas.
Thanks for having us.
You bet, Rick. Pleasure's ours.
Well, glad to have you guys on, and I'll start with you, Keith, just because this run that the Kings are having has really been so exceptional. I have to kind of laugh whenever I hear people talking, though, about what a great Cinderella story it is, eighth seed and all of that. I mean, on the one hand, I'm complimentary of the team, and I guess on another hand, I'm very cynical about it. I see them, frankly, as a talented team that just really underachieved like hell for most of the year. Really should have been a higher seed than the eighth seed. The talent on the team warranted it, specifically after the trade, after the acquisition of Jeff Carter, but maybe even before then. So I don't see them as your typical eighth seed at all, and I would guess that a lot of people don't. What are your thoughts on the Kings, the seeding, and the way that the media has picked up on that story?
Well, it's been a really up-and-down season for the Los Angeles Kings, and I agree. You know, coming into this season, you know, with Mike Richards, trading him, I really thought that the Kings were in a position to definitely win the Pacific and, you know, contend for the West. I still thought that, we were kind of missing that key piece, you know, that scoring winger. And, the season was just, I mean, they just could not put the biscuit in the basket. I mean, it was so evident throughout the season. Jonathan Quick is the only reason why the Kings are, you know, even close, sniffing the playoffs. But really, I think what happened, first you got the coaching change, and no disrespect to Terry Murray. Terry Murray's the guy that rebuilt, the sort of team concept for the Kings, but he was never really going to be that coach that took you to a Stanley Cup. And, you know, once you made that coaching change with Daryl Sutter, and I think, you know, Daryl Sutter would disagree, but I think we're seeing a little bit of a softer side you know, Daryl Sutter, a guy who can kick you in the pants when you need it, but also sort of a player's coach. But yeah, you know, definitely the addition of Jeff Carter was huge. But also important is the subtraction of Jack Johnson, who's a very talented player, but had a really tough time with the plus minus, had a tough time hitting the net. And you slide a guy in like Slava Voynov, who can actually put the puck on the net, and things are starting to fall into place. You know, Jarrett Stoll is not being relied upon to be a second blind, you know, scoring winger. He gets dropped down. And all the pieces sort of fell into play. Now, the run we're on in the playoffs is remarkable. I have no idea how we're 12-2, but it's definitely happening, and a very exciting time to be a Kings fan. It's one of the few times that we can actually say, I think we might be able to win something, rather than just hoping and praying for it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's been a juggernaut. It's really been something to behold. And as far as it goes with Jack Johnson, as you said, yeah, very talented young player, no question about that, and he's shown flashes of it over his career. But just in the things you ticked off there, if he's having problems putting the puck in the net and he's having problems with his plus minus, I'm afraid there's not too much more that's important other than those elements, Keith. I mean, if you're coming up 0-2 in those areas, yeah, you're not of any use to your team.
You know, and that's the thing, you know, Dean Lombardi was, you know, very critical of Jack when he first joined the organization. And, you know, he played in Michigan, and he was sort of the you know, the center of the team, scoring big goals and just kind of being Jack Johnson. And in a structured system that the Kings were playing in under, you know, Terry Murray and then Daryl Sutter, it's very hard for him because he wasn't the guy. Jack Johnson needs to be the guy. And, you know, you trade him to Columbus, which is, you know, the worst team in the NHL this year. And they allow him to be the guy because, you know, they've got what else do they have to play for? And he starts putting up good numbers. But, you know, as that team starts to get better, they start getting more structured. I think you're going to see that old Jack Johnson that we saw with the Kings surface there with the Columbus Blue Jackets. So, you know, he was a good guy, but a little too much of an ego, and I'm frankly glad to be rid of him.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the tools, but, yeah. He's got to be in the right circumstances, I suppose. In looking at this, Ken, and I certainly want to ask you about the Devils, but I want to start by asking you, because I know in the last couple of days here, I'm sure you've been looking ahead and preparing here for the finals. I want to ask you, Ken, about the Kings, just because I'm very fond, as we've said previously on the show, of these cross-sport analogies. Who do they remind me of? They remind me of the New York Giants a lot, this whole thing. Ooh, what a plucky underdog, 9-7 team. Yeah, they're the same bunch of underachievers that tanked twice to the Washington Redskins, who they should have housed by 40 points both games here. Do you see anything in the Kings similar to the Giants in terms of covering them, the way they got on that roll late in the year and how they finally put it together like they should have been doing all along?
Yeah, I mean, no doubt, because you're looking at two very talented teams, obviously, and like you said, you're taking the opposite approach of most and criticizing them a little for it because they were capable of more, and, yeah. And that's a novel approach. But, yeah, it just shows you, as you guys know, you got to get hot at the right time. And I mean, you know, the Giants next year, they're going to lose a week 6 game to Cleveland. Not that they even play Cleveland in week 6, but they're going to lose that game and everyone's going to jump off the bandwagon. And, you know, it ultimately means nothing. And you used to say it about the playoffs. I mean, there's been so many 8th seed runs, you know, and it seems more so in hockey than ever because it is such an emotional game. It is such a, you know, psychological game where you get hot and you roll with it. And I'll tell you, I'm sure there are a lot of Devils fans, you know, checking out Keith's work because besides the goalie, no one knows anything about the Kings. I mean, the Kings might as well be from Afghanistan as far as Devils fans are concerned, and I'm sure it's the same vice versa. I mean, it's not the Red Wings. It's not the Vancouver Canucks that you've seen a lot of. It's the Kings, and no one knows anything. The biggest tie is Larry Robinson. You know, the Devils fans, oh, yeah, I think Larry Robinson used to coach the Kings. You know, that's the extent of it. And then the goalie, who last thing Devils knew, he was only good enough to be third on Team USA and didn't even play. So, you know, the fact that he's tearing it up like he is and just playing out of his mind. So it's interesting. To me, it almost reminds me more of an NCAA tournament game where you got someone from one conference playing at school from another conference and they never play, and it's just kind of a really interesting matchup because you don't know anything about your opponent. And that, to me, is what this finals is going to turn out to be, guys.
That's a great analogy, Ken, because, yeah, some years there's some cross-pollination. Some years There's teams that have a history with one another and some level of familiarity, and this year certainly on the other end of the spectrum. But something I like to hit with both of you guys, and I'll start with you, Ken, as far as whether it be a media angle or whether it be coming into play with the scouting and the familiarization of the teams. One of the nicknames that there's been for the Kings over a period of time has been Philly West, because it starts with Richards and Carter. I understand that it goes also to the coaching staff and the front office. There's been a decent amount of cross-pollination. There's Simone Gagné, if he ends up being healthy enough to play in the finals, which I understand probably doesn't look that great. But with the strong Philadelphia influence there and the fact that there's been a rivalry with Philadelphia for years that just recently manifested itself again in the playoffs, is that any kind of an angle that the Devils fans are latching on to, that at least there's a couple of guys there skating for the Kings that are very, very familiar faces?
Not really from a fan standpoint, but okay. The players, you better believe it, the players. I mean, Richards and Carter have damaged the Devils at times tremendously, you know, during the last 3, 4, 5 years. That one playoff series where Philly took them out in 5 games, I mean, it was those two guys that killed the Devils. So you better believe everyone in the locker room knows what those guys are capable of and what they, you know, what damage they can do. Something Keith will enjoy to hear is that, you know, I live only about an hour from Philly, and the Philly people – and the media, as we know, are about the least unbiased media on the planet, the Philly media. But and I say that lovingly but accurately. They'd still like to tell you that the Flyers are better off without those guys. So here these guys are tearing it up, and they're in the Stanley Cup Finals, and they're a big reason their team's in the Stanley Cup Finals. They got a lousy goalie, you know, that they're paying millions and millions of dollars, and they'd like to tell you that the Flyers are still better off having made that trade. And to me, it's absurd. You know, it's just a comical concept because those guys have been just as strong as they have been.
Well, sure. Yeah, I mean, that is the one thing that they could point to is that Giroux got a chance to really kind of blossom as a, I think, a guy that'll probably be a perennial Hart Trophy candidate from here on in. But yeah, I mean, it's not really addition by subtraction, certainly when you're getting rid of guys like that, and that's an understatement. In terms of that, Keith, And again, we talk about that being a reason that people really kind of latched on to L.A. at the beginning of the season. I think they were my pick to make it to the conference finals and probably lose there. So there were some expectations for them coming into the season. Talk about that, Keith, the influx of guys from Philly and how that really played into the heightened expectations for the year.
Well, I mean, it's crazy because, you know, Bobby Clark is one of Dean Lombardi's mentors. You know, he said him and Lou Lamoriello actually are Dean's biggest influence as a general manager. Well, you want to talk about Flyers West, we absolutely are. Dean Lombardi, pro scout for the Flyers. Ron Hextall, say no more there. Richards, Carter, John Stevens is an assistant coach. I mean, it's throughout the entire organization. But the thing is that, you know, Dean's tried to create an identity for the team. And, you know, the Flyers have definitely had some, you know, some up and down there. But they've always had identity. And there are a lot of people that want to play for Philly. I mean, that's the reason why Richards and Carter signed those long deals, is because they wanted to be Flyers. So I definitely think it starts there to a certain degree. And, you know, it's something that, I love the Flyers. I think that they're, you know, the offense that they play, it's a fun team to watch. This year it's obviously been rough if you're a Flyers fan, but, you know, I'm thrilled to have, you know, Mike Richards, first of all, he's got a ton of character. I think he had a bad rap, you know, with that dry island thing out there in Philadelphia. But a guy like Jeff Carter, you know, you hear maybe he was a little bit more the wild child kind of thing. But the thing that Dean's done is he has this great group of veterans. And even the rookies on the team, these are guys that all wore letters pretty much, you know, in their junior franchises and, you know, maybe in the AHL a little bit. So there's so much character in the room. You can kind of afford to have somebody that might at some point be a bit of a malcontent, because there's enough character to kind of keep them in line. And, you know, I haven't seen Richards and Carter partying out in Hollywood quite yet, so it definitely seems to be working. But, you know, I think it all starts with the character, and, you know, you got to give credit to Dean. I mean, Bobby Clark's one of his mentors. It's a great mentor to have.
Well, depending on how this series goes, we may see the Stanley Cup making its way up and down the Sunset Strip this summer. No question about that. But as far as it goes, though, Keith, I mean, how much of it plays in terms of Richards, Carter? I mean, the way that it played out, and I think for those of us who had expectations for the team, this is how we expected it to go. they were essentially just the icing on the cake, because you have a core in place there. I don't know that anybody thought that Jonathan Quick was going to be this good this year, but certainly people thought that he had the upside. Drew Doughty, an upset about that guy and everything that he's done. Anze Kopitar, probably the core offensive player on the team here. How much of it helps in terms of this Philly thing that they were just the infusion to get them over the top, if you will, as opposed to having to be the guys to come in and carry it? You already had the foundation in place, it seems like.
Well, the importance of training for a guy like Mike Richards is huge, because, we weren't ready to make that next step unless we had a second-line center. When Jarrett Stoll is your second-line center, you have a problem. And, he was always a third-line center. We just couldn't get anybody to go. You draft Braden Schenn, but Braden Schenn, look, he's not gonna step in and be an elite second-line center immediately, so that's why you make that trade. But the key piece was Mike Richards. And then, of course, Dustin Penner underperformed all year, and he's a guy that we moved a first-round pick, and then a guy that we had drafted in the first round. So the Mike Richards is probably the most important piece in the Kings puzzle. And then a guy like Jeff Carter, it's a reasonable cap hit. The guy can pot 30, 40 goals. And, he's not having the most amazing playoffs. Defensively he's been great, and certainly there was that one game where he had the hat trick. But a guy like that scoring 30 goals in the regular season gets you in much better position than being an eighth seed. Then you start looking at winning the Pacific or maybe even winning the conference. So I think it was a great move. It was definitely a move that we had to make. If we didn't trade for Jeff Carter, I don't know that we'd necessarily be in the playoffs, and Dean Lombardi actually might be looking for a job. So ended up working out really, really well. I don't think Jeff Carter was the guy that we probably would have targeted. I think we probably would have held out to the summer, maybe make a move for Zach Parise if he was available. But it ended up working out. I think it will work out for a long time to come. So definitely two great additions on the team.
Boy, and that's amazing. Just the kind of disappointing year that Jeff Carter was having in Columbus. And that disappointment would be an understatement. Yeah, for him to be such a huge part of the Kings getting it going here, I suppose, does show the ability that he brings to the table, notwithstanding some of the other issues. Before I redirect to the Devils again, just one more follow-up about the Kings. Not a direct, much like Carter, he didn't come over directly from Philadelphia, but Simone Gagné coming over after the one-year layover in Tampa. What do you hear as far as being the latest about him? Because certainly that's some punch that any team could use if healthy, but how's the head from what you're hearing?
Simone Gagné is cleared for contact. He's been practicing with the team for the last couple of days. He's been skating, pretty much on and off for the last 2-3 weeks. I do not expect Simone Gagné to be in the lineup unless there's a significant injury. When you're 12-2, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. We could definitely use Gagné on the power play, because the Kings' power play has been nothing short of terrible in the playoff, well, all season long, really. But I don't expect to see Simone Gagné come back. Maybe if we're up 3-0, even if we're up 3-0 in the series, Daryl Sutter likes to roll four lines. And, when you're playing a team like the New Jersey Devils, you have to roll four lines or else you're going to be dead in the water. So unless if the Kings win the Cup, I could see, Dean maybe petitioning to get his name on there. But I don't expect to see him skating in a game this season.
Wow. I mean, what an eloquent statement about how strong the L.A. Kings offense has been throughout the playoffs here. You may not necessarily need Simone Gagné in the lineup. That pretty much says it all right there. We talked about this, Ken, a little bit with the Kings having Jonathan Quick there, and about how he has been one of the strongest players in the entire league this year, maybe the best goalie in the league at this point in time. Versus what the Devils have gotten out of Martin Brodeur. And I know that in a handful of times talking on the show previously, you and I have talked about Brodeur with the, I think, reasonable assumption that his best days were behind him and maybe he had a few bursts left in him, but I don't think we ever talked about anything on a par with what he's been doing recently. Is there any kind of a sense of concern among Devils fans that this run may be a little bit over his head for what he's been able to summon up here? He's had some really rough goes of it over the last 2 to 3 years at various points in time. Are there any Devils fans that are pessimistic enough to fear that there might be a Willie Mays falling down in the outfield moment coming up in the final here?
No, I don't think so, because his play has dropped off, the last couple of years. But it's been gradual and it's been minimal. He hasn't gone from, Marty Brodeur, of his prime to Brizgalov. I mean, he went, you know, it was a minimal drop off, and you've seen it. I mean, he's been the better goalie. That's why these teams are advancing. I mean, Keith knows as well as anybody right now, everyone's looking for every little thing and difference and power play and injuries. The better goalie is going to win the series. It's that simple. It doesn't always break down that way, but 9 times out of 10, maybe 9.5 times out of 10, it does. And he was better than Lundqvist. They advanced. He was much, much better than Brizgalov. They advanced. He was barely better than the tandem Florida had because the Devils were slow starting, and they advanced. And it's that simple. I mean, if Quick's better than Brodeur, the Kings are going to raise the cup and vice versa. So I don't think anyone's worried. Obviously I'm a little biased. I know the guy, but I've never seen a better goaltender. I've never seen a better goaltender in hockey history, and he's a surefire Hall of Famer, and he's got more wins than anybody. So anything he does can't possibly be surprising anybody. Yes, he just turned 40, so usually at 40 you're retired already, not still trying to chase a cup. But people underestimate his ego and his you know, his pride. He's very soft-spoken. He doesn't make stupid comments. He doesn't like the spotlight. He doesn't like anything about him. But at the end of the day, he's heard people think he's done. He's heard the talk and read the stories that he's lost, you know, he's lost some speed off his fastball, and he's answering that. He's answering his critics. He's maybe even answering himself. But he's been phenomenal, and that's he's playing well enough right now that they can win a cup behind him, and he's done it before. So I don't think there's any kind of concern that he's going to run out of magic, because he's got more magic than anyone I've ever seen play the game. So I think the Devils' concerns for this series are not between the pipes. I think they're fully confident that he'll play well enough to allow them to win, you know, this final series and win the cup for the fourth time with him, you know, with him backing it up.
Well, and that's how the great ones get motivated, is by having to go up against a young lion like Jonathan Quick, and as I said, probably a lot of people would say the best goalie in the NHL today, so it should certainly bring out the best in Brodeur. As far as other key players on the Devils here, there's two in particular that I want to ask you about. The guy who I think most people would probably agree is the most explosive offensive player in this series, Ilya Kovalchuk, finally making it to this stage at this point in his career, and living up to, certainly at this point, the monster contract that he got from the Devils. And speaking of contracts, I know there's been a lot of focus on this. It was a name that Keith brought up, that a lot of teams are going to be interested in this guy over the summer. That, of course, being Zach Parise, Olympic hero, so we've seen it out of him before on the big stage. But talk about those two guys and the thoughts on this, the thoughts on the contract situations. One guy has one guy needs one, the expectations for their production, really anything that comes to your mind.
Yeah, I mean, right off the bat, Kovalchuk, my reaction to him is I've been impressed at just what an overall great hockey player he is and what a great guy he is in the locker room. I know he came with all sorts of baggage, and he's selfish, and he's this, and he's that. He's none of that. Maybe he was. I wasn't with him in Atlanta, but I'm with him now. This guy is all about winning. If he's got to block a shot, block a shot. I mean, there are times he's on the ice, he's too selfless. He's looking to pass when he should be shooting. So this guy has impressed me just with, obviously he can score. You know, there's a lot of people in the game that can score, but he is just an overall great hockey player, and he's great in the locker room, and he wants to win, and he's willing to do what's needed to win. On the other side, with Parise, he's the hardest working guy I've ever seen. I've been covering the Devil since the early 90s, and he's the hardest working Devil I've ever seen. And that includes Brodeur. And Brodeur works hard, but Parise works harder. There's no one in that locker room that gives more 100% of the time, whether it's watching film, whether it's, you know, staying after practice, getting to practice early, holding meetings, whatever. He's the guy. I mean, at his age, captaining a team that's, you know, either going to finish first or second in the entire league, he's going to demand whatever price he wants. And the Devils, Lamoriello's done a great job through the years of keeping the guys he wants to keep. You know, there's guys that have gotten away, but he's kind of signed off on him getting away. And I just don't think – I don't know how they're going to do it financially, but I cannot see Parise in a different uniform next year. I just can't. I know the story came out with the Rangers. If the Kings win, you know, there's going to be a lot of people after him, and he's, you know, going to get his money. There's no doubt. But I'd be very, very surprised if he's not back with the Devils next year. I just don't see – you know, similar, Rick, like we talked with OC, that everyone had the Giants trade in OC for the last 3 years, and I told you 3 years ago it wasn't going to happen. He's not going anywhere, and you know what? He's still on the Giants and has another ring since that happened. I just have the same gut with Parise that he's not going anywhere this year.
That's a tremendous analogy. You were right about that. All I can tell you is I've seen the Photoshops, and I got to tell you, he would look phenomenal in a winged wheel. Keeping my fingers crossed on that one. There have been a lot of rumors to that effect. But as far as it goes for the Stanley Cup Final, I want to ask you about this, Keith. This will be the last question I ask before we bring it around to predictions here. And I think I know what the predictions from each of you guys are going to be. But, Keith, for a guy like you who's been covering the team for years and anybody who goes to kingscast.tv or kingscast.net can check that out. I mean, you obviously have been on this story for years with this team, but – L.A. is a notoriously fickle market here with the winners and losers, folks jumping on the bandwagon. So from your perch, what's it been like over the course of this playoff run with the folks there? I mean, I from what I can see nationally, it looks like there's been some good support there and people jumping on the bandwagon in decent numbers. But what are you seeing up close?
Well, you know, it is definitely interesting, you know, walking into the office and having somebody say, hey, you know, how about those Kings? Because I have never heard that before in the 6 years that I've been, you know, been covering the Kings. So it's been nice getting that attention. But, you know, the Kings fans are a very tight-knit group, and there's a lot of them. I mean, there's been a lot of consecutive sellouts at Staples Center. Even, you know, when we were losing games 1-0, you know, in January, the Kings kept, you know, selling out the building. So the fan base is really, really good. But Los Angeles, the problem is it's so spread out. So there's no real there's heavy concentration of people, and you know, you see a lot of Dodgers, a lot of Lakers gear, but you know, they've always really supported the team. You know, even when you know, Yaroslav Modrý was their, you know, your top pairing defenseman, they still had tremendous support from the fans. So you can't say enough about that, but it's definitely been great to get some national attention and, you know, going on some of the message boards and seeing, you know, the support for the Los Angeles Kings, something that we, you know, haven't seen since Gretzky was here. And, you know, I actually think this is probably a better team than that 93 team. So,
yeah, I think a lot of people would certainly agree with that assessment. I don't think anybody could deny that it's a deeper team. No question about that. All right, predictions here for the finals. I'm sure there won't be a lot of suspense in the picks that either of you guys are making. But let's get number of games while we're at it just to spice it up. So, Keith, winner and number of games.
You know, I have to say, I mean, as much as I love the Los Angeles Kings, you got to throw a ton of respect towards the New Jersey Devils. And the thing that worries me is the fact that Ilya Kovalchuk and Zach Parise don't play on the same line, because you could neutralize one line. So it's going to be definitely going to be hard fought. I think Marty Brodeur is playing fantastic. You know, Volchenkov, you know, if he keeps blocking those shots, it's going to be really, really tough. That said, you know, I underestimated the Kings, you know, because they sputtered into the playoffs, you know, against Vancouver Canucks. I had the Canucks in six. And since then, I've seen a completely different team emerge. I'm seeing Kings in five.
Okay, interesting. Oh, and now while I'm at it, Conn Smythe prediction. Who do you think is going to be hoisting that?
There's no one who should be raising it on the Los Angeles Kings than Justin Brown. Justin Brown turned it up completely since the deadline. This is him now in his prime and has really carried the team. I don't think Jonathan Quick has actually played his best hockey, because we haven't needed him to, because we've been so offensively potent and, you know, the defense has been backing him up. So Justin Brown for the Conn Smythe should the Kings win, and definitely to me Kovalchuk if Jersey pulls it out.
Interesting. Ken, your thoughts here. Devils in how many, and Conn Smythe winner?
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I during this call, I'm thinking, am I going to go gutsy and pick the Kings? And I just can't, but there's a tremendous fear of the unknown with the Devils, with the Devils fans, with me. You're just, I mean, you hear the names and you've seen a couple of the games late at night during the playoffs, but you just don't know. And you know what you're getting when you play the Rangers. You know what you're getting when you play Philly, and you can prepare for it. And I just think it's going to be tough. I would say Devils in six, 6. Keith, if it does go 6, I'm going to go out there for game 6, so I'll look you up. I'm not sure if you're going to be out in Jersey or not, but I'll be at all the Jersey games, and I'll be out in L.A. for 6 if it gets there.
I'll buy you a beer if you're there.
What's that?
I said, I'll buy you a beer if you come to Staples. I'll be there.
Beautiful. All right, beautiful. Yeah. That sounds good. And Conn Smythe-wise, I mean, the reason, you know, the Devils have gotten here, like I said before, is Marty. And there'll be no one other than him doing it, raising the trophy and then getting the Conn Smythe. He's gotten better as the playoffs have gone along. They've gotten great contributions but balanced contributions. Parisi one night, Kobe one night, you know, these new guys, this fourth line with Bernier and Jonathan Ryan Carter. I mean, that's been their best line over the last two games, has been their fourth line. So you're going to get something from them. The defense has been great. Zdlitsky has been phenomenal. What a great pickup he was for Lamoriello, you know, mid-late season. So they're getting contributions from everywhere, but the rock has been Brodeur, and if they win, he'll be the reason they win, and he'll get that. And it's eluded him, because through the three cups, he's never gotten it once. One went to Lemieux, one went to Scott Stevens, and one, which is still one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard of, went to J.S. Jaguar in a losing effort the last time the Devils won. So this will be not only Marty's final cup, but it'll be his first and only Conn Smythe as well.
Well, based on, again, the fact that Dustin Brown has been the strongest player for the Kings through the playoffs, as Keith pointed out, I don't think Brodeur has to worry about a SoCal repeat there. I don't think Jonathan Quick's going to be hoisting it in a losing effort. But, well, my pick would be I think Quick hoists it. I think he has a strong finals. I think he hoists the Conn Smythe. I'll say Kings in 6 is my prediction based on what we're seeing. But looks like it's going to be a heck of a finals here. And again, these are teams that the mainstream doesn't necessarily have a ton of familiarity with at this point in time here, as they do some of the other teams that have been in the finals in the last couple of years. But for those of us who really love hockey, this should be a tremendous final series. A real pleasure to have both of you guys on, as per always. Keith Kornelick from KingsCast.tv and KingsCast.net, and Ken Palmer from the New Jersey Devils Game Day program. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming back on. Looking forward to talking the puck with both of you guys in the future. Thanks, guys.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, you bet, guys. It was a pleasure as well, and enjoy this finals run, man. It's going to be a memorable one.
It certainly is going to be. Thank you both for joining us, and thank you all for tuning in FDH Lounge mini episode number 124.